there have been two very nerdy topics that we've spent a lot of time on in the last like 4 or 5 episodes, like between PUBG and Apple stuff. And while those are both very important topics, I'm pretty excited to talk about something not only different, but probably more broadly interesting and accessible.
More interesting than a video game?
Yeah, I would say so. More important on Maslow's hierarchy.
Right, right.
And it's also something that's been certainly on your mind a lot lately. Although mine too, with all this relocating all around that I'm doing. So the topic of working in the new economy, working online, working remotely, working for traditional organizations in that context, but also working for yourself or for non-traditional kinds of organizations made possible by a technological reality.
Yeah.
It's been a topic for podcasts for a long time. I think that the overlap between people who talk on podcasts and people who have some relationship to working remotely is very close to 1-to-1.
Right. If you're set up to talk on a podcast, that probably means that you're comfortable with working from home, working with people online, talking to people online, all the things that happen when you get put on a remote team or just work online as a freelancer or what have you to begin with.
Yeah. And also you're lonely and want to talk to people from your computer. So it's a good fit. And so like I have talked about this topic online with people before, but I feel like also this area and like the feelings about it and the implications of it change so rapidly. I mean, yeah, every technology thing changes rapidly, but I really feel like we're still just getting started with the era of working remotely, and yet so much has already happened, so much has already changed.
Interesting.
I certainly think it's worth checking in about now at you and I at this point in our show on episode 10, but by episode 110, things might look really different. So this may be a perennial topic.
Totally. You've been working remotely. Well, you've been working on, let's not even talk about remotely. You've been working online for quite a while now. I mean, read, write, web, that was an online job. You didn't go into an office, did you?
Eventually I did, but not at first. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't even my first online job. My first job out of college was a traditional job in a traditional office building that lasted 1 year. But after that, I got that job at News Trust, and that was a totally remote job. And that was 2010 when I got that job. It was still very rare in my social circles to be working remotely. It didn't seem weird to me at the time. It seemed awesome. It still seems awesome. But it was still very early days, not just for the technology that made it possible to work remotely, but also for the kinds of companies that could even handle having remote employees.
Right.
So that was the first one. And then, yeah, that translated naturally into the read-write job and another job. I also had a different job at the time. At the beginning at read-write, I wasn't fully paying my bills writing for read-write. I also was kind of consulting and writing and editing for a local news site in Portland called Neighborhood Notes. And they had two business partners who lived together and worked out of their house, but that was their office. And I didn't go over to their house to work with them. You know, their business was mostly online and they were running a website and I was helping them with their website from across town. And likewise, half of the read-write team was in Portland. That's how I got the job, actually. It was at kind of a conference for online journalism that I met Abraham Hyatt, who was the managing editor there, next to Richard, the founder, who was in New Zealand, which is another thing. You know, he was running the whole site from thousands of miles away and many hours of time difference. There was this kind of cool scene that read-write there, but it was like getting together at bars to drink beer after work. You know, like we would hang out on Skype all day and then we would go see each other to have fun.
Right.
So I would still very much consider that a remote job. It just had some of the benefits, some like all of the benefits and none of the drawbacks of being in an office together. But after the acquisition by Say Media, when I moved to the Bay Area, then there was an office downtown in San Francisco. And that was the first time I had gone into an office for work in years.
Would you feel strange working in a normal quote unquote normal office environment at this point in your working career?
I'm not sure I would find it strange, like in an eerie way. I mean, I do go to Burning Man headquarters for a few days at a time, and I find it so exhausting and I get so little done. It's not that I think it's a weird thing to do. I just don't like it as much. And I mean, I can imagine different kinds of jobs that I might have where I might like it. If I had jobs that were more about collaborating and thinking big in a room with people, I would probably prefer to do that in person. I certainly wouldn't want to spend all day on the phone, hangout or Slack calls or FaceTime or whatever. And when I do have a day like that in my remote working life, I really don't like it. But the kind of work I'm doing now, which is involving mostly writing and kind of web front end stuff and lots of like in the zone activity, I see no reason at all to go into an office and do that.
Yeah, I definitely feel the same way. I used to have a job that did have the standard 9-to-5 office environment. And I feel like I, maybe more than other people, made that into a remote kind of job. Not necessarily because I would stay home all day and work, but because I've always found myself really attracted to the ability to feel mobile and just being able to work from different places. I mean, we are no longer in the world where it is a requirement for you to have a desktop computer in an office cubicle. I've been working from my laptop for ever and ever, and now I work from an even smaller device, an iPad. And so, you know, I would have a video project I'd be working on. I would come into the office, start the project there, and then feel restless, bored, and close that laptop, get up, go get a coffee, and never go back into the office, just responding to emails and that kind of thing, and working on the video from afar. And it worked out well for me because my team was gracious, but also it worked out well for me because I enjoyed that kind of environment a bit more. And I think that we have a lot of tools readily available to us now, so that it's not a challenge. It's not hard at all to do. But I am only starting to get accustomed to a truly working from the internet, from wherever type of job situation. When I moved to California about a year and a half ago, I have not stepped foot into an office again, except my own office space, which I rent out myself. And no one cares whether I'm here or not, because I'm the guy that's paying the rent on the office, and I'm the guy that's finding the clients. So it's kind of still new for me, but man, it's only been a little while, and I have really felt like it would be a very, very hard thing for me to go back into a standard office environment and try to work in that kind of format again.
You've actually reached a level of it that I've never gotten to, that I'm quite envious of, having a third place that isn't your home to do the job that's yours.
Yeah.
And you just moved in there. I want to know how that feels. Like, do you like having that other space that you can totally be your work domain? Or is it just more to think about?
The biggest challenge for working on the internet for me was the fact that I do get, as you said, many podcasters do, I do get lonely. And I feel like I'm the kind of person that likes to work alone with people, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Like, I'm not a super chatty person in office environments. I'm pretty happy to like sit and write or get work done. But even when I started writing a few years ago and had kind of a prolific year of actually producing a lot of work myself, I would do all of that from a coffee shop. I would have a ritual where I'd get up in the morning and I'd get to the coffee shop as soon as it opened at 7 a.m. and I would have a coffee and I would sit at the bar with the baristas. You know, the baristas would be there making coffee. I'd be there writing away. And I didn't really talk to anybody. I did have like a normal, that makes me sound weird. I talked to people when I ordered my coffee and when they asked me questions, but I wasn't just sitting there to talk, but I like being around people. It doesn't feel very pleasant to me to be alone all the time. And so when I moved where I live now, I really moved from like an inner city house in Florida to an incredibly remote and isolated home in California. And it's incredible. It's beautiful. I love being there, but I found myself having a hard time getting up and doing a lot of work every day because I was alone. And so even this office space that I have now, I purposefully rented an office with other people. They're not here all the time. I'm recording in the office right now and I'm alone, and I'm not here all the time. Sometimes they're here and I'm not. if I would have rented an office by myself, I would have never, ever stepped foot in it because it would have still been an alone place. But this isn't. I get to hang out with people and share the space with others. And I had a couple of meetings in here in the past week. And one of the people that I share the office with and I have been collaborating on a project for the last week or two. And it just feels good. It feels very dynamic to have this kind of environment. And so, yeah, it definitely helped me feel more alive. And you had kind of alluded to it at the beginning. I am getting more and more into the world of internet work because I've sort of, for the first time, started my own thing, whether it's an agency or a consultation business or just a name for what I do as a freelancer. I'm not sure yet. But I don't think I would have been able to even name it without this office space, where I was constantly around other people with other businesses who were firing at all cylinders. And it really helped me invigorate myself and figure out what I was actually trying to do.
I really hope to get to that point. I don't know where my next few years of work are going to take me as far as offices or coworkers, but I have had home offices ever since I left ReadWrite, actually. I've been working from my own house. And in the last couple of places, especially once Ariel and I moved in together, we've been getting 2-bedroom apartments so that I can use one of the bedrooms as an office, which is wonderful. It's really nice to have it all self-contained, not have a commute, etc. But it is isolating. It is distracting. It's hard. It's hard to separate work from home. And also, I kind of can't help but mix my jobby job stuff and my sort of personal pursuits together in that office. I wish I didn't have to do that. I wish that work, like real, like gainful economic work, could be kind of more compartmentalized. But I also wish it could be more fun and more collaborative while still giving me the independence and kind of control over my life that remote work, but also working for oneself, can provide. I have worked for myself and had a company for my own consulting services for over 5 years. It's been pretty slow since Burning Man became a full-time thing, but I have still supplemented that here and there. And it's something I hope to ramp back up soon, actually. I've always been the only person. I've never really done much in the way of collaboration with that agency. One or two projects, I've had a friend come in to do, maybe the back-end aspect of a web project or something like that, or video or voiceovers. I've done that a few times, but mostly it's just me. And a friend of mine, Micah from the Bay Area, was doing this kind of work as a designer and feeling sort of similarly isolated and kind of stuck at home, and created a Slack team for hanging out with all of the people that we knew who were doing this. And there are 10 or 15 people on the team, but it's been completely dormant for a year or more. It just didn't really work. It didn't. The virtual spaces for hanging out were not able to supplement this kind of work for us. I mean, I think a lot of people do use Slack that way, or Twitter maybe. Maybe you could argue that that is what I was using Twitter for all the time that I was using Twitter, kind of hanging out ambiently with other people who are working, but it doesn't really replace it. And so that your model that you have of an office that's yours, but going there with other people, your work together is not bound up in each other. You know, that's the thing. The thing that really appeals to me about it is that you are working together, like you said, but you're not working on the same thing. You're not depending on each other in those work ways. You're mostly just sharing an environment and a resource together without having all the weird pressure that having coworkers in the physical space together has. And that's always been the hardest part about working in large organizations for me, is not really understanding those relationships so well. They're not always so clear. Coworkers are weird. And this kind of work that we're doing has a very different relationship to collaboration and a very different relationship to what working together even means. So I'm so happy for you. I'm so glad that you have that. Is there any amount of actual collaboration, sharing of contracts between you and the people that you're working with?
Yeah, actually, that's been a big part of it. And what you said earlier is interesting to me, in the sense that one of the things that's bad about working in an office with other people is that other people are weird and you don't always get along with them, and you have to because you're working together with them. And in this office that I'm sharing with 3 other people, I knew 2 of those 3 people for like a year before we had this office, and they knew the 3rd guy for like oh, I don't even know, 5 years, 7 years before he came and joined in. And I had met him for a month and got along very, very well with him before he came and joined in. It was actually my kind of idea that he do so. It would be nice, right, if you could have that same benefit when you were working in an office with other people. If everybody got to mutually agree that every other person in that office environment was great and that they got along with them. But I don't believe that's the typical scenario in a corporation. And so, yeah, because of that, I'm able to, go in on projects with other people. My question is, why didn't that work in that Slack room that you talked about? Like, what was the missing element? Do you know why it lay dormant instead of kind of having that activity?
No, I haven't figured it out yet. And it was the same idea that you're describing, where we're going to have enough overlap and sort of complementary skills amongst the 20 of us that we're going to be able to get more work this way. And it can be a kind of guild where, somebody who's a web designer but needs a video editor can just drop a message in this room and we will be able to quickly spin it up and share the work around and share the wealth around. It seemed like a great idea, and it just didn't catch on. And I don't think I know at all. There's no good reason why it didn't work. I think that it just kind of waxed and waned with how busy we were. I mean, I did take a full-time job not that long after starting. And it's not like I completely shuttered my consulting business, but I definitely had another Slack team to be hanging out in, for one thing. But I don't believe that's it. I actually just think that this must be the new era's version of company culture. And it's this mysterious thing. You either have it or you don't. And the dynamic of the group has to generate the activity and the interest in sort of keeping the fire going of hanging out, venting, blowing off steam, laughing with each other, sharing horror stories about clients. There were interesting manifestations of doing this as a bunch of independent contractors, but there was, I guess, just not a cohesive enough culture. And I think that's much easier to build when you have people in the room together. Or even just people from the same community, like you and the people in your office can kind of do the same stuff outside of work. And in this Slack channel, we were all over the place, all over the planet. And that's the reality of this day and age, for sure. And like, it's a good thing that people in, all these different places around the world can collaborate together. I've had some pretty interesting international collaborations in my time as a contractor. And certainly at Burning Man, like I had a Skype call with Russia this morning. That's one of the things I love about this world, but you don't have the kind of downtime in common with each other. So maybe that's part of it. But I think that there's something more missing. There was something more that was missing from that. There was just some sort of cohesive shared reason for Hank for being there. And I think that people start companies with each other when they really feel that with one another. They have a common enough vision of what they want to do, the kind of work they want to do in the world, that they actually might as well just go all in together and do it. That's something that I hope to experience. I have a lot of friends that I feel like I want to be entrepreneurial with. And I don't think that necessarily precludes, I don't think that means like a return to the old corporate office, weird coworker, burnt coffee culture. I think that there's a possibility of having a shared organization with a shared culture that is distributed and that does have all of the let's call them luxuries of remote work and independent work, but with those shared goals more kind of explicitly laid out. And I guess we just didn't have it. But there are examples of this. I mean, one company I think about a lot is Bandcamp, mm-hmm. which is my favorite music industry company in the world right now. And it's always the first place I go to buy music. If I find new music that I like, no matter how big the artist is, I always go straight to Bandcamp to see if I can get it there. And often, even for really big artists, they are on Bandcamp. And so I can buy them there. And they're a completely remote distributed company with no office. And I think that contributed a lot to their ability to stick with it and succeed. I mean, they just didn't have the overhead that being a physical company has. And in the music business, you have to cut every cost you possibly can. And I love that they made the decision not to cut the costs of supporting their people but they made the decision instead to just let everybody work from their laptops in their cafe or bedroom or home office of choice or co-working space of choice. And that was the right call. And they built a company that succeeded. And I admire everything about their company. And then their product showed a really respectful way of doing business that Bandcamp has found. That kind of respectful way of doing business is a native product of this era and history that I do feel like I'm a participant in. So all of that is to say, I really believe in the power of working together, working alone with others, or whatever you said, working together in a much more relaxed sense than being employed by the same corporation, thanks to the power of technology. It's just not something I've landed on yet.
I think it's interesting that we've spent so much time in this conversation about working on the internet, talking about our physical bodies and the way that they interact with other people, because I mean, maybe what I'm feeling is that even though we have gotten so far, we have still not cracked the code of making you feel that intimate connection to another person in the same room as you, and the way that that kind of can fuel you and the work that you're doing. An example of that maybe is just something like the Zoom call, which has become kind of a standard thing for many businesses. I don't know what you guys use to communicate, Zoom or Skype or FaceTime or whatever, but I've never really felt extremely engaged in those calls. I've never felt like I'm in the room with people when I'm on those calls. I mean, partially maybe it's because you feel a little self-conscious because you are being seen more than you usually are being seen from a computer screen.
Yes.
But I think that there's other reasons too, that it doesn't have that same vibe.
There's a word that doesn't exist yet that I've been looking for years. The closest analogy verb I can come up with is squinting, but there's like a full body squint that you have to do in order to participate in an online call. And I'm not going to lie, I'm doing it right now. You know, like in order to stay fully engaged with you talking on FaceTime, just one-on-one, I'm doing it, but it's so much worse when there's crosstalk and, you know, people on regular phone calls calling into the internet. You know, the busier of a meeting it is, the worse it is. Or, you know, and actually mostly what I'm dealing with is seven people in a room together with one crappy conference call phone on the desk, and I'm squinting to hear all of them, and they're not even talking loud enough for the phone to pick up because they can all hear each other in the room.
Right.
The imbalance is part of what's weird, but this like squinting thing that you have to do in order to be present is the opposite of what it feels like to be in the room with someone. It's almost like an extreme opposite, where when you're face to face with somebody, there's so much more information coming from them than you can possibly absorb. And it takes all of the power of empathy and listening just to get what the words are that are coming out of their mouth. But there's also body language, and there's, you know, just the slightest bits of inflection or eye movement. You know, there's an infinite amount of information as far as you're concerned on the other side of the table. And it's the opposite online to such an extreme degree, because there are so many bad connections between the microphone picking up your voice and the microphone picking up their voice, and your speakers on each side or headphones or whatever. And there's Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and the vagaries of the internet in between. The fidelity is so much lower. It's inescapably low. Having incredible home internet like I have for the first time in my life has not changed the quality of this at all. I mean, it has changed the quality of streaming video. It's changed the quality of getting information that is already definite and already exists in full-fledged end-to-end form. But when people are speaking extemporaneously, there's just way too much to compress and way too narrow of a tube to do it. As far as the technology, we use Slack. And so we use Slack calling in some channels. We use Google Meet because that's the email that we use. There's always the stupid fight about which one we're going to use for any given meeting, and it's never, ever defined anywhere which one we're going to use. We also have a conference call line that's just for regular phones, and honestly, that's the one that works the best. So I usually hope that we're using the phone and not the internet, because even if I can't hear the words individually as well, I have far fewer 5 or 10 second silent spots during the call. I'd prefer that. It's such a mess. Like all the crosstalk, there's no way to raise your hand. There's no way to you know, interrupt someone without just straight up interrupting them.
Just blurting it all out. Yeah.
It's just not there. And, you know, this does actually kind of get us back to the PUBG conversation. But really, the aspect of that conversation that I'm thinking about most is the Second Life comparison. The best online group conversations I have had have been on Second Life, and only because of how good their audio engine was. If you were wearing stereo headphones, they just spent a lot of time on the 3D sound and even the room sound. So if you were outside, it sounded one way, and there were, you know, crickets and stuff coming from all directions, and you could hear exactly which direction the person was in. If there was a fire, a campfire in the middle, you could hear that one exactly where it's supposed to be. And when two people were talking at once, you could hear them from two different directions. And that was such an incredible technology. That's not how calls work. The thing is, they were able to build an entire world. There were bodies in that world with definite relationships, spatial relationships to each other. So they could calculate how the sound would travel from one to the other. But on a call, you're just basically assuming like there's a microphone in a static position. There's no way to relate like where one person's laptop on the table is to another person's laptop, especially if one's in LA and one's in San Francisco. So, you know, I think maybe where the squinting comes from is that our brains are used to listening to people speaking to each other with a spatial relationship. And when that's removed, it just gets really bizarre. And like having people's voices like blasting directly into your ears over headphones does not replace it. Like that just makes it this weird, eerie, disconcerting thing where it feels like they're inside your head or something.
That's interesting. The full-bodied squint thing resonates deeply with me. And maybe a way that I would think of it is thinking that when you're on a 15-person Zoom call, you have to put in a maximal amount of effort to be minimally understood.
Yep.
Your use of Second Life is really interesting to me because this whole time I've been wondering, well, what is the secret sauce here? Like, what's missing from these online components? And it makes me wonder if maybe a part of it is just that the people who are developing the software in which we are communicating online have never thought about these human characteristics that are so important when you're trying to talk with somebody else and engage with them on a 1-to-1 or even a 15-to-1 level. The people are trying to make an efficient call that doesn't drop often. They're not trying to make something that is world building. I don't believe that anyone that's worked on Skype or Zoom has said, how do we make people feel as if they're sitting in a room with other people on a patio when they're having this call? That probably just hasn't been something that has been a desired effect. And maybe that shows.
Well, it's clear that some of those product teams have never thought about it. Others seem like they're trying to be as human and empathetic as they can. But I think the metaphor is just wrong. You know, like the fundamental thing is that like your microphone has no idea where you are. The output, like in Second Life, you're using the same microphone, but the world through which the other person is hearing you can say that person is over there, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how they modulate the sound. There is no such thing as over there in something that's just technology for connecting callers to each other. You have to have that intermediate virtual space in order to create any semblance of reality. I hope more technology companies are thinking about how to create that space, because it might seem nerdy. It might seem too much like a video game to some people, but as I think you and I have covered more than adequately in these conversations, it's an important part of it feeling real. And so that's what's interesting to me about the whole Memoji thing. And it makes me wonder whether, you know, that is a first step towards an environment in which these Memoji can interact with each other. I saw a pretty interesting microblog post the other day. It actually bummed me out that you and I didn't think of this. It was somebody idly speculating that the reason Memoji exist is for future Apple glasses where there's no way to get your face in FaceTime. You know, like how is a pair of glasses going to capture your actual face with a camera?
Oh,
I mean, if you can see, but you can't be seen, you know, having this virtual avatar that can appear in somebody's glasses, you know, like that solves the problem pretty neatly, doesn't it?
I am glad that you brought this up instead of me, because I was going to ask you about the AR angle if we talked long enough about this and you hadn't brought it up yourself. But
yeah,
I mean, I always think about how this is going to extrapolate out as time goes on. I think of Ender's Game, which I read and made a big impression on me years ago. And I believe it was this sort of sub-vocalization thing where you can talk to anybody else at any time by basically making these sub-vocal noises that this chip or computer or something that is embedded in you will turn into actual words and send to somebody else's chip, and they'll hear it in their head. And I thought that sounds about right. Like, this will definitely become a more and more common thing. And I wonder sometimes if the world of text messages will feel a bit outdated as we become more and more comfortable using our voices again. Because I mean, I don't think that there would be many people that would have a disagreement in this argument, which is that the voice is a better method of communication than a text message is. And it's also faster if the computer is efficient and good at doing its job, which it isn't quite there yet. But the idea of having a pair of glasses on that has a little Memoji face pop up, and that face is talking to me, and I can respond with a Memoji memo of my own, is pretty compelling, and I think would go a long way of making you feel like you're around other people in a way that text messages just don't.
Yeah. I mean, it even makes sense to me in real time. Like, they can do it over a FaceTime call. You know, like, what if somebody calling you is them, like, appearing to you that way? It appeals to me, but it's still only half of the equation. You know, like, I mean, I guess you could do it pretty well if the software says, like, when somebody calls you, they're going to be, you know, a comfortable, like, human conversation distance away from you in your vision, and then the voice will come out of that AR object that represents them. Yeah, it could work, I guess. And if they can do it with 32 people like they're doing with FaceTime group calls, you know, that could be pretty interesting. I hope that's what they're thinking about, because these virtual representations of the people involved are an integral part of it feeling real, I think. But to get back to the topic of work specifically, I think that there's an interesting problem here, because the work that you're doing, the virtual characters are not doing the work ultimately. You know, like, if you're working together, you're still going back to your terminal to do the work. It's an interesting idea to imagine a virtual office where the meetings happen and where people can put stuff up on the walls.
Right.
I would do that. If that's how meetings were, I would totally do that. I would be game for that. I think there's just a tension, and I don't know if it can be resolved, between the kind of work that is economically productive that we do on computers and these human social dynamics. I think that, like we're discussing, there are ways to solve for those social dynamics in digital form, but inevitably, as we do it, we start to fall back to talking about just pure communication. What about the part where we're doing stuff together? And, you know, like, in the villages of 100,000 years ago, where we first, as a species, learned to do this kind of communication, we were all farming or pounding stakes or making pottery or whatever, you know, while we did this, and it created a music, and we sang, and we, you know, we had all, like, our whole life was bound up in the work. And now it's the most disembodied thing we do is actually get to work.
Mm.
So it's no wonder that we're coming back to the physiological challenges of this kind of work by talking about how uncomfortable it is and how our whole bodies are squinting. And, you know, I hope we can solve the communication part of that. But you know, when it's finally time to get back to work, we have to, like, suck it up and go back to our ergonomically terrible typing posture. And I'm getting tired of that. I don't feel like I did anything, you know, like, it's this purely mental record of having a bunch of experiences that I almost felt like I wasn't there for. I shouldn't let myself go down this rabbit hole too far, because I think I've inevitably carved out for myself the fact that I'm going to use computers for my work. But there's something that I kind of regret about it, because computers used to be all about play and fun for me. And they still are about that. And I don't feel bad about that. It's just that, like, it's kind of ruining it that I have to spend all day, you know, in Google Docs, the least fun environment in the entire computerized world, then like the place where I want to make music is the same place that I had to do Google Docs all day. It's the same problem I have with my home office thing, except that buying a second computer just for work doesn't solve the problem, because that's not how software works. It would still feel like the same place. So in much the same way that I feel like I can't compartmentalize my work well enough when it's a room in my house, I feel like I can't separate the things I love about computers from the things I have to do on computers. And the only solution is to spend all day on computers. And, you know, as we've discussed in other respects, that's no solution.
You know, that kind of makes me consider my distaste for the Mac, and how my distaste for the Mac is probably because all of the things that I hate doing the most on computers have now been relegated to Macs.
Yes.
Like, I had to download a file today, and I tried to download it on the iPad, and for some reason Dropbox wouldn't let me. I had no idea why. So then I had to go on a Mac and do that. So when I think about doing things like boring file downloads, I think about my Mac and I don't think about my iPad. And maybe that's good, that a majority of the fun, creative things I get to do on my iPad and the lame, boring things I get to do on my MacBook, because it makes the iPad still feel fresh and new and exciting to me. But I mean, still, even still, we're talking about the same kind of glass screen interface. It's not like they're so wildly different from one another. And I think the overlap is going to obviously grow and grow over time. And yeah, there is a real problem that comes with that singular portal entryway into the world of the internet, the world of creative software, the world of business software, all being the exact same thing, because it makes you less excited to, you know, log out for the day and then stay in the exact same seat that you were in, on the exact same screen that you were in, to now go do fun things. You know, again, we will move from talking about the internet to talking about physical space. But that is one of the things that I love the most about having multiple places in the city that I like to go to, because it's important for me. It's important for me to turn off my iPad, put it in my backpack, walk out of my office, close the door, and then enter a new door, and then decide what I'm going to do there. And even my iPad's mobility has been such a fun thing for me, because sometimes I'll just move from room to room or place to place. I'll be sitting at a desk writing emails, and then I'll pick my iPad up out of its smart keyboard, move over to the couch, and start editing audio, and I feel like I'm doing something different than what I was doing before. So I think that we're going to find ways in which this technology will allow us to feel like we're creating new experiences, but working does create some serious dilemmas.
Yeah, but you're right. It's the more embodied the computers become, the less of a problem it is, because they transform into the thing that you need them to be, instead of always being this laptop at a right angle that you know, you interact with in the exact same way no matter what you're doing. It's a really interesting shift, and one thing that occurs to me is that I'm having these challenging feelings about doing all this work on this computer, possibly because of the constraints of the kind of work that I'm doing for the kind of organization that I'm working for. One way that you and I and many of our peers have come up with to solve the problem of not really feeling engaged with the work that we're doing is to invent our own work. And that is something that I think you and I would both like to talk about today, which is like the digital first work that we've both come up with to find more meaningful ways to do our work, to kind of have our work arise naturally out of our own ways of interacting with technology. Because the problem with working for a 100-person company like I do most of the time is that, like, the tools that we have to use to do the work are totally set in stone. You know, and I can cheat with other little side apps that make the particular thing I have to do easier. But at the end of the day, I mean, I have to use Google Drive and Slack, and I have to deal with Word documents and all this stuff that I would never do in my own work. And so part of the reason why I've been pushing so relentlessly to create my own work as a consultant, part of the reason I'm doing that is so that I can use my own tools more naturally instead of having to fit into the kind of work that this organization has found as the lowest common denominator of things they can make their employees do. So do you think that's connected? Do you think that, that part of why, you know, kind of remote technical workers like us, our technologically intensive workers like us, want to create our own companies to do our own individual piece of the huge puzzle of digital work, is that we want to be able to work the way we want to?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's a big part of what drew us to computers and technology in the first place, is the way that it allows us to do something differently than the way that we've seen it presented in the past. Even just in the sense that we both probably have very different workflows for different things. We use different writing apps. We use different apps to record this very podcast. Like, it's important to be able to do it the way that makes sense to you. You don't get that liberty when you're working for somebody that is telling you how to do that.
Yep.
The opposite end of the spectrum is the fact that the technology as a whole, the internet as a whole, allows for us to do so much more than we could do alone. I've been considering this as I start to spin up my own business, that I don't know if I could do it if it was something that had to remain local. I'm almost positive that I wouldn't. And I assume that you feel the same way. 5 years ago is when you started a consulting business. Do you think that you would have been able to do that in the area that you lived, or was that entirely dependent on being able to do it over the internet with clients around the world?
I wouldn't have had enough work if I hadn't been able to use all of the networks I had everywhere, including back home in Atlanta. In fact, a lot of my clients have been from Atlanta. And actually, the first clients that I had, the first real significant jobs I got as an independent contractor, were with app store friends, friends from the ReadWrite days that I knew purely from the internet, who made various apps that I liked. And, you know, I was one of the people that, you know, they pitched stories to, like when they had big updates or whatever. And so they came to me directly and said, hey, could you just write the copy for our marketing stuff instead? And like, you know, we didn't live in the same places. It's the same deal for them. If the app store didn't exist for worldwide distribution, the people who make these apps that we love wouldn't be able to do it either, just by like pounding the pavement and putting up flyers on telephone poles. It's absolutely the same thing with the company that I started.
I definitely feel the same way. I think that the internet has been part of what has allowed me to do the things that I do, and also allowed me to like consider the kind of work that I want to do in a way that I wouldn't have thought about it otherwise. It's helped me contextualize the skills that I have, instead of maybe just saying at a base level, I can provide A, B, and C, thinking, what do I really want to offer? And then trying to figure out a way in which to offer that to everybody. And I think that that's part of the compelling nature of that kind of work. Even like I said earlier, working in this office with other people, the majority of the work that every single person in this office does is for people around the world and not necessarily people that are locally here. And so I think that we're finding more and more people who are inclined to do this kind of work. We are finding more and more people who are finding themselves freed up to do the kind of work they want to because the internet is allowing them to do that.
Absolutely. And it's also enabling everybody who's doing this to piece together a living, even if it's not possible to get a job in the sense that we might have thought we were going to do at the outset of our careers. Even in cases when we do have one, like the one I have now, the job isn't necessarily going to provide enough to really make the life that we want to have possible. And the possibilities of piecing together little projects from all over the world, and it adds up to something really life sustaining. So it's the best possible way to do it. There's so much more freedom to do it this way. And like, maybe freedom is scary. Like maybe employment used to be something that provided security and stability, and you gladly traded away your freedom for that. And certainly, as you and I have discussed plenty offline, hustling around for contract work has a very special kind of anxiety associated with it.
It sure does.
I think that there's a real light at the end of this tunnel. You have just formed a new entity and launched a website for it. And I've had mine for 5 years, like I said, but it's something that I've let lie dormant, and I want to bring it back out into the world. And I think we should explicitly say that this is one of the reasons, one of the many reasons, but one of the reasons that you and I are doing this show, because we want to reach more people with that unique thing that we do.
A long time ago, I listened to an interview with Naval Ravikant, who is the, I think, founder or operator or something of AngelList. And he's had a stake in the future of working on the internet for a long time now. And he predicted a good deal of years ago that at some point there would be more and more people who had no normal job with normal hours, but instead would be entirely dependent on different contracts that they picked up from different places and would basically be getting up, looking at their phone, choosing what they were going to be doing for the day and doing it. And only a few years ago, that felt like it could be realistic, but certainly didn't exist. And now I'm saying that, and it sounds like the most natural thing in the world. And so for us to be able to have that kind of role in our own lives and on the internet is how I want it to be. And I think it's how you want it to be as well. And I think that we know quite a few people who have that same similar desire. And it's interesting to me to see the ways that that has been working out, not only for others, but for myself. And so I'm very proud to be able to present something to the world that I am happy about and love working on and want to work with others with.
Okay, so here they come. The first ever ads on Internet Friends. And they're ads from us, so hopefully that's not too big a deal. But maybe in the coming weeks or months, you'll hear some other ads from some other internet friends of ours. We would only put them on there if they were friends of ours whose work matters to us as much as ours does. That's a promise. Hi, internet friends. It's John here. Internet Friends is brought to you by my work at Ablaze Interactions, where I solve communication problems for clients who work to repair our world. I can help with information architecture to transform your website, content strategy to tell the right story and reach the right audience, and writing and editing to find the authentic voice of your company or organization, your product, or your idea. Ablaze Interactions has consulted for world-renowned events, political candidates, law firms, nonprofits, and great apps on the App Store. Light up your ideas. Go to ablaze.co and let me know if you're interested in working together.
Hello, internet friends. It's Drew, and I want to tell you about Keyhouse. There's a quote from Kurt Vonnegut that I read, tucked away in an essay he wrote about the seasons, where he said that he thought that the idea of four seasons was a lie. Instead, we should have six. Fall doesn't move to winter, and winter doesn't move to spring. Instead, he thought the season should be like so. Summer, fall, locking, winter, unlocking, and spring. I believe there's a beautiful poetry to the idea that creation itself requires a time of unlocking before anything of substance can bloom. And perhaps you're listening to this message right now, stuck between what you're doing and what you want to do for the rest of your life, realizing that you might be in that cruel season of unlocking too. Find your own space for unlocking. Go to Keyhouse, keyhou.se, and let's find the key.